Yesterday, in the concluding hour of our program, I shared some of my past. And I shared my past just to demonstrate there's nothing in my past that makes me qualified to expose Islam, much less Pauline Christianity. I was a business guy. Although, you know, I was very engaged in Christianity, an ordained ruling elder in my youth, a teacher of evangelism, someone who led Bible studies on a regular basis, gave keynote speeches at large Christian assemblies. The fact is that I came to realize that the religion was on shaky ground long before I came to know the Torah. It was obvious. Christmas and Easter are pagan, folks. There's no such thing as the Trinity. It's this idea that the totality of God fit into a man is preposterous. The idea of men killing God is ridiculous. The idea of bodily resurrection is stupid. Sunday worship, wrong on all accounts. A God who would want to be worshipped isn't worth knowing. A God who would say, love me or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever in hell, isn't lovable. There could have been no Jesus Christ in the first century. The name's completely bogus. It was created for the first time in the 17th century when the first J was created. The whole thing's just a pile of lies. And this notion that the internally contradictory Christian New Testament is somehow the inspired word of God is just BS. An internally contradictory book cannot be inspired by a rational being. So I came to realize that Christianity was full of it, that it was it's a religion that was comprised by piling together popular lies. Now, I had no idea who God was at the time. I didn't even know if there was a God at the time. But I did go through the period where I was willing to question my faith because it was so obvious that it was not true. Now, most religious fanatics can't do that. They can't admit that there was no Jesus, that there is no Christ, that there is no Trinity, that man can't kill God, that God cannot be born, God cannot die, that bodily resurrection is a fool's fancy, that most of the things that are celebrated in Christianity were born and bred in Babylon and are purely pagan, and that Christianity is a religion in opposition to its own foundation. It's like a house that you built with not only no connection between the framing of the house and the foundation, but you actually have the foundation and the house in opposition to one another. That's how obviously Christianity is disjointed and inappropriate. Now, I shared that whole story of my background with you at the very end of the program yesterday because I was a guy that thought they understood Paul. Yeah, I have, you know, all of these commentaries on what Paul was trying to say and how Paul, for example, was opposed to Gnosticism and how his battle was against Gnosticism when it's just so obvious that Paul was a Gnostic. He was appealing to Gnosticism. And I thought that Paul's flaws were my flaws. I initially thought that I understood where he was coming from. That, of course, is no longer the case. I now see myself personally as more flawed than ever. After all, I was fooled by a fool. Paul's rhetoric in Romans 7 is insane. I shared that passage with you because we spent several days over the woman and her husband dies and she's dead to the Torah and how the Torah made Paul a sexual pervert. The whole rationale of that is absolutely insane. I mean, it is literally insane. The author of that argument is insane. Out of touch with reality. Completely irrational and illogical. Dishonest. The author of Romans 13, where where Paul says that governments were established by God and that all governments are for the benefit of the people and that people should subject themselves and should submit to governments. And he's speaking of the Roman government that God calls the most deadly and despicable beast in all of human history. It's so obvious that what he is saying is wrong. In Galatians, where Paul says that the Torah cannot save, where Paul says that Judaism made him a murderer, when Paul says that there are two covenants and the one documented in the Torah was of Hagar. It's just so pathetically obvious, so irrefutably obvious that Paul was a liar who cannot be trusted and that his words absolutely were not inerrant or inspired by God. It is just obvious, folks. Anybody with open eyes and an open mind recognizes that. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter saying that Paul was the first to corrupt Yosha's words. And he was. It's why Thomas Jefferson had a subset of the Christian New Testament and not the entire thing. He removed all of Paul's letters. His New Testament was comprised entirely of Yosha's words because he realized that the rest of it actually spoke against what he said. He recognized it. Why don't you? Now, I came to recognize it, but it took a while. And that whole process of recognizing that I'd been played for a fool by Pauline Christianity was humbling. Yet the truth's blatantly obvious. It's ubiquitous. It's undeniable. And yet I was blinded by religious indoctrination. I missed it. But no longer. I now understand Paul. I know his mindset and strategy. And I recognize his character flaws and his inspiration. Turns out, I'd written a book detailing the life of a ever so slightly more perverted and violent version of Paul, Muhammad. Same inspiration. As I mentioned briefly once before, after coming to realize that Paul was a fraud, that he was in fact the wolf in sheep's clothing that Yosha warned the world about, I wrote another book, this one designed to clear away all of the clutter so that Yahweh could speak directly to you, father to child, and reveal his covenant relationship through his Torah teaching, just as he had to me. That presentation is available to you for free at intro2god.org. I encourage you to read it. If you are questioning whether God exists, if you have been beguiled by religion into condemning God because religion is stupid, and there's a lot of agnostics out there, a lot of atheists out there that are atheists and agnostics because they're associating God with religion and they know that religion is stupid. But if you're an atheist or an agnostic, and you're open to the idea that there really could be a God, but that this God would be as opposed to religion and the stupidity of religion as you are, then I encourage you to read Yada Yah. It's yadayah.com, YADAYAH.com. And Yahweh will prove to him, to you, personally, directly, irrefutably, Yahweh will absolutely prove, beyond any doubt, that he is God and that he authorized and inspired the very words which you will consider in Yada Yah. He will do it through science. He will do it through history. He will do it through prophecy. He will do it through consistency. He will do it through brilliance. He will do it through compassion. If you read Yada Yah and your mind is open to the possibility that God exists, to the possibility that God exists as opposed to religion as you may be. You'll find him in his words as they are shared with you through the translations found of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and yada yada. And if you've come to know Yahweh, if you know who he is, and you have a sense of the covenant family that he is inviting you to participate in, and you want to have a toolbox where you can go on the same voyage of discovery through the Hebrew words that comprise the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, then I encourage you to read IntroToGod.org. It will provide you with that toolbox. It will equip you to go on the same journey of discovery. All of these things are available for you. Take advantage of them. We have a good friend of mine who has done that very thing. He took advantage of the tools that were made available in these very books. And he's come to know Yahweh, come to engage in his covenant, come to share what he has learned. His name is Larry. Hello, my friend.
Hey, I thought I'd call in, you know, when somebody says science,
mm-hmm.
people have a tendency to cringe. And it was mm-hmm. science which led me to realize that this was the truth. It was the words that Yahweh shared when he broke down the fact that with a big bang, and he uses mm-hmm. that term, mm-hmm. He created the universe in 6 days from the point of inception, which is about 15 billion years our time.
Right.
And he mentions the term relativity four times.
Right.
So, you know, he even explains yeah. relativity in one of the Psalms or Mizmors.
There's so many scientists who are atheists because they recognize that the Christian religious perspective and rhetoric on God is stupid. But what they don't recognize is that God got creation right long before they did. You know, Larry, if you go back just 60 or 70 years, virtually every scientist, particularly astronomers and physicists, thought that the universe had always existed. Their opposition
yeah,
was the very notion. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, their opposition yeah. was the very notion of creation. And now they know that the universe was created, just as God said it was. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is a surprise to most, and that's why I invited agnostics and atheists to read yadayah.com, that long before scientists realized that the universe had been created, that Yahweh said it was created, it had a beginning. And what's interesting is that, as Larry mentioned, Yahweh uses the term Big Bang to describe the creation of the universe. So scientists did not come up with that theory in opposition to God. But what's particularly riveting is that we have the microwave radiation that is still available to be tested in the universe as a derivative of the Big Bang. And the Big Bang, by the way, was not the start of the universe. The Big Bang occurred once energy cooled to the point that matter could be formed, because before energy coalesced into matter, time did not flow. So the Big Bang marks the period where the time of the universe can be quantified, the age of the universe can be quantified. Before that time, there is no measure of time, because without matter, time does not exist in the way that we understand it. Now,
well,
Einstein also mentioned
that mm-hmm. that the heavens quantify the unit of measure exactly and accurately of
yes,
the manifestation did. Of power of mm-hmm. the Almighty, and its spreading and expanse makes conspicuous his handiwork. So he was saying that the universe was expanding
right.
3,500 years ago. We did not know that.
There's actually two things that he said there. One is that it was a calculation that's
right.
How much energy was necessary to create the universe. And the universe really is an extraordinarily complex multivariable equation as to how much energy had to be put in to get the result that we see today. And if that energy had been different by so much as 1 to the 50th power, life would not have been possible. So it had to be exactly quantified as to how much energy that would be put into the initial system to end up with the result that we witnessed today. Very fine-tuned calculation. But the second aspect of it is something that we did not expect, that Hubble was the first to prove, but Janus stated in the Torah and throughout the prophets, which was that the universe is expanding. And he was very blunt about the fact that the universe is expanding. We learned that he was right, although no scientist gave him credit. They credited Hubble instead because of the redshift. The fact is that stars that are moving away from us, the wavelengths of life are stretched or shifted to the red. That shifting, by the way, that stretching of the light wave is how we know how old the universe is. We measure the cosmic radiation from the Big Bang, and we find that it's about 14 billion years ago. That's because the wavelength of light has been stretched to about 10 to the 12th power, and by using calculations of recognizing relativity and how much energy was prevalent at the time of creation and the speeds involved at creation, the velocities involved at that initial Big Bang explosion, we can use the stretching of the wavelengths and the cosmic radiation background noise from the Big Bang to determine that, in fact, the universe was created about 14 billion years ago. Now, that's not actually when it's created. That's when the Big Bang, that's when time began. And if you recognize the nature of relativity, where time moves more slowly in the presence of great velocity or great energy, and you use Einstein's calculations, what you recognize is that 14 billion years using an Earth-based timepiece is exactly 6 24-hour days from the perspective of the Creator at creation. So when he says it took 6 24-hour days, it's precisely accurate and verifiable through the cosmic microwave radiation, which is stretched. The wave is stretched to 10 to the 12th power. You can do the math. Or you can read the opening volume of Yada Yah called the Higher Existence Volume, and it'll walk you through that reality.
Actually, that's in the or section.
Yeah, it is. The or section. Or is the Hebrew word for light. And Yahweh specifically talks about how light was the first thing that was conceived, and how light is a form of energy, and that energy then cooled and coalesced to form matter, and that matter is nothing more than organized light. But you know, Larry, every epic of creation thereafter that Yahweh discusses, including the waterborne nurseries for stars, precisely accurate in time and in scope and in the order of things, all the way to the Cambrian explosion of life, which is so much in conflict with macroevolution, but so much consistent with Yano's testimony. I'm going to say that it was science that caused you to recognize there is a God, and that his foundational treatise to us, his Torah, was reliable. There are some places where science and the Torah disagree. Let me give you two examples. One is, according to scientists, life either spontaneously was conceived on this planet by random acts, or it rode in on a comet, because they came up with a rode in on the comet theory because
Can I correct you here?
Sure.
No, that's not according to science. That's according to those who really don't believe in science, who call themselves scientists.
Right. Yeah, because they're not using evidence and reason. Because their problem was that evolution from spontaneous generation of life was promoted under the idea that even though that was mathematically impossible, and they'd done the calculations, it's mathematically impossible that life was conceived by random chance. And particularly now that we know that life is based upon a three-dimensional language or alphabet in DNA, it's absolutely impossible. But before they knew it was impossible, they always justified it by saying that you give enough time, you get 3 billion years worth of time, and the impossible becomes possible. But what they found is that because of the Cambrian explosion, that every form of life that we know of today, every phyla or body form of animal life that exists in the world today, all came to exist within a period of less than 5 million years, which means that there is no initial spark of life that then evolved to all of these other body forms over billions of years. So
yeah, plus that, you don't find the half cricket, half grasshopper, whichever is supposedly higher up on the evolutionary chain.
Right.
And I want to point something else out. You talked about the Che in there, and since we're discussing evidence, the way time rolls out is kind of interesting because it rolls out at an atomic half-life is the best way to put it.
Uh-huh.
Where say we've got 15 billion years and day one will take half that time. So we're at 7.5 billion and then day two will take half that time. So you're at 3.25 billion and on down and down. And then
kind of like the arms in a galaxy. So many of nature's
spirals work.
Yeah, the spirals all show that kind of same concept.
Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that in each epoch of time, so if day one covers 7.5 billion and day two, 3.25 billion and on down.
Right.
Each day that Yahweh said he created something, in that epoch of time is when it shows up in the fossil record based on the day that he said he made it.
Even further than that, I just
want to point one other thing out. There's a Mizmor 90.4, a song or a psalm, and he describes relativity. Now, you really, pinch yourself if you believe somebody 3,000 years ago was writing about relativity because this just happened. He said, indeed, because 1,000 years in your sight and perspective are like a day, the same as yesterday when it passes by a perspective observer in the night. So 1,000 years, depending on where you're at in the space point and time, one person could see 1,000 years, another just a night.
Yeah, relativity is named relativity because time is relative to the observer. And that's exactly what that Mizmor psalm was talking about. You know, when it comes to the very creation of life, if it did not have a creator, the odds of life being spontaneously generated are much less than a tornado going over a junkyard filled with automobiles and miraculously creating a flyable 747 comprised with all of the avionics and seats ready to go after flying over a junkyard filled with abandoned cars. And yet that 747 wouldn't have a pilot. It would not be alive. It would not be able to find its own source of fuel, nor be able to have a consciousness and be able to observe its surroundings. And yet it would be, you would rationally say that's impossible. You could have tornadoes for a billion years, and no tornado over a junkyard is going to create a flyable 747. And yet life is vastly more complex than a 747. And there was no junkyard of already human-created things.
I saw the stats on just one amino acid in your body, insulin.
Yes.
Insulin, amino acids are they're proteins, and they're made up, proteins are made of amino acids, and if you took insulin, that's a 42 amino acid line there, protein. Mm-hmm. If you took insulin and just the odds of those falling, in direct order of 42, it's something like six sextillion to one against it.
Yeah, of course.
Now this is just one protein.
Once we've found out that life was comprised of DNA and RNA, and had to admit that the DNA is in fact a language.
Well, it's somebody a three-dimensional language,
right? It's a three-dimensional alphabet or language that is responsible for all life. And once we recognize that, it should have been over. I mean, at that point, any rational individual is going to say, okay, so there was a creator. And
yeah,
Yanowitz's testimony is precisely accurate.
You have that, and then you have the concept. And I brought this up once, I think, on the other show, where, you know, all amino acids are left side. You know,
yeah.
I mean, as an example, you know, if you look into an electron microscope, you're going to see it turning to the left, like a screwdriver turning it. That's
right.
That's when you look at amino acids and it says it's got L-arginine or L-orthanine or, you know, that's what it means. But all amino acids are left side. Now, if it was random chance,
you know,
it would only be 50-50. Why didn't you get any accidental right-hand side? And by the way, they would proliferate because nothing could ingest them or eat them or use them.
How come all animal
forms would be beneficial?
Were created male and female?
Well,
how did the eye come to exist before the being knew that there were things to see? How did hearing come to exist, the ear, before there were things known to be to be heard? What is human consciousness? What is the soul? We can't quantify it. We can't measure it. We can't create one. We can't even study it. We have no idea what it is. Why is man, if he's so convinced that life could have begun by random chance, why are there absolutely no studies now funded by any university anywhere in the world on the spontaneous generation of life? We recognize it's impossible.
Well,
so the only conflict now between science and
looking like a buffoon.
That's
right. They would look stupid.
Yeah, the only conflicts now between science and what Yahweh has to say are those places where scientists clearly have gone off in a leap of faith. And every place that science can actually be observed, where it can be demonstrated, where you can go from that which is observable to a conclusion based upon the observable, Yahweh's testimony and science are in complete accord.
And like I said to you in the break, if the science diverges into faith, I mean, now you're starting to go into religions area, and that's no place. Science should be logic and reason. You should have something that backs up what you are saying.
And it largely is, but it isn't always that. For example, the science of global warming is all religion. In fact, the founder of the Weather Channel, who is one of the foremost meteorologists of our time, just wrote an open letter to the scientific community saying that there are something like 9,000 scientists that agree with him, and this whole myth of man-made global warming is just absolute nonsense. You know, for example,
they back that up at the UN with two or three people that they pay who are their scientists, and then they've got about 300 bureaucrats
that stand around in
white coats and play.
You do have scientific religion. Spontaneous generation of life, macroevolution is religious faith because the evidence it says exactly the opposite. Man controlling his environment is a religious political lie, a myth, as opposed to science. So there are the overwhelming aspects of what is known science are in wholesale agreement with what Yahweh said to us 3,400 years ago in the Torah. Now,
hey, but give them a break. At least they have an ethos. You know, they're not nihilists.
Yeah, there you go. The reality is that here we have been. I began the program by condemning Islam and the Quran, which is easy to do. It's the dumbest, worst book ever written. And then I've transitioned to condemning the Christian New Testament. Paul was a moron. Easy to do, but the fact is that any book that annuls, that calls into question the Torah, is wrong. Because Yahweh, in his scientific presentation of creation, in his scientific presentation of the flood and in his depiction of human history throughout the entire swath of time over the last 6,000 years, and particularly as he depicts what is about to occur on this planet. He is so precisely accurate in predicting history, past, present, and future, and presenting it, that there is a zero possibility that he did not inspire those words. A being out of the construct of time, out of the ordinary flow of time, with the perspective of what actually occurred at creation and what is going to happen in our future, revealed the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so it proves that it is way beyond human understanding, and therefore I think you're wise to pay attention to what it says. I think being ignorant of the Torah is the single worst thing you can do to yourself.
No, that's true. I want to point one other thing out here, too.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Yada Yah and ITG are going to do for a person is it's going to get them ready to understand the very nature of God, because right. if you look at it, okay, the Ten Commandments are, in fact, not commandments. They're statements of fact.
Yes.
You know, the notion that Yahweh loves everybody and is omnipresent and all-knowing,
religious
that's religious tradition, and it's garbage. He never yes. said any of that.
Right. Yeah. The actual God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, who is the one offering you to the opportunity to participate in the covenant, really righteous dude, straight up, likable guy, you know, so different than the religious God. Question for you. Would you want to spend time with a God who wanted you to worship him?
Absolutely not.
No. Imagine how insecure a God would have to be to create a being for the express purpose of worshiping him.
He'd have to be a Stalin type, afraid of losing power.
Yeah, despicable. Mm-hmm. Would you want to have a relationship with a God that says, love me or I'm going to torture you forever in hell?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'd like to go out to dinner tonight with you and your wife, Yada, and if you don't, I'm going to burn your damned house down and kill all your kids. Now, what time's dinner? You know, I mean, that's what we're really saying.
That's
here.
What you're saying here. And, of course, no. What does Yahweh say about the fate of human souls? Does he say, love me or I'm going to torture you forever?
They cease to exist. They cease right. to exist. They're disinherited. They're cut away from right. the family. That's what right. he says.
That's what he says. Now, he you says know. There is a place, a Sheol, a place of separation that's eternal anguish. But the place of separation, to get there, you have to deliberately and knowingly lead people away from God.
Yeah. You know, I want to, can I just read something
sure.
real quick
please,
here?
Please.
You know, Abraham did not know Yahweh. He had just met him. And Abram fell on his face.
Right.
And so Yahweh spoke to Abraham. And here's what he said. Here I am. Look at me. My familial covenant relationship, Berith, is with you. You shall be a father of many enriched people from different races and places. And then the writer here points out, and this happens to be Yada, it's hard to see up when you're looking down, which is why Yahweh's directions are the opposite of Catholic and Islamic prostrations. Now, you know, if we go down a little further, Yahweh then, Abraham now knows Yahweh. He understands his nature.
Yes.
And he says, he tells him that he's going to have a child with this 100-year-old woman, you know, 90-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And at that time, Abraham fell on his face and he laughed. So the
right.
only time,
right.
and this was all good, and then they named the first child Laughter,
right.
or Yitzhak.
Yeah,
and so, you know, so what we've got to understand is that there's a lot of religious copy editing going
yeah,
on. And when you get into Yada Yah and ITG, you're going to be able to see it. I mean, there are literally passages I've seen that are 25 words long, and 23 of the words are either missing or have been added.
Correct.
But, they don't even come close to saying
you, you read a passage where Yahweh says, behold, look up at me. The Hebrew word is henna. Are there any hennas in Yahweh's name?
Just
two of them. The Hays.
Yeah, you're talking about the Hays. Yeah.
The Hays, yeah.
The two people standing up, actually. Is that
right. Standing, in fact, he says, you know, I want you to stand up, Hinnah. I want you to pay attention and look up at me. Here I am. That's from Hinnah. The Hinnah is the basis of the Hebrew letter Hey. The Hebrew letter Hey means stand up, look up. It's drawn as a person standing up, looking up, reaching up to God. There are two of them there. He says, you know, you are my familiar covenant relationship. He's got the two people there, Abraham and his wife Sarah, and he says, I'm going to add to you. The letter that sits between the two people that are standing up, looking up, one which is female, one which is male in Yahweh's name, is a tent peg, which is the Hebrew waw, which means to increase, to add to. And the only other letter you have in Yahweh's name, he was literally looking at Yahweh's name when he explained his name there, is Yahweh's hand reaching down with an open hand to lift him up. So it is that very statement is an explanation of Yahweh's name and what he's offering and who he is. He's not a Lord to be feared that would smack you down, that you'd have to worship, that owns you and controls you. He's a Father.
Oh, by the way, speaking of speaking of prophecy, he does.
Yes.
He says that these religious copy editors, you know, he says, you clerics, he says, you're going to remove my name and you're going to replace it with Lord.
Yep. And what does he say about that?
Before they ever did it.
Yeah, what does he say about it? And what's his commentary on that?
Well, his commentary is pretty bad.
Yeah.
He says anybody goes and follows the Lord around, he says, they're going to be disinherited.
Yes.
You people that literally removed my name purposefully, you're going to be incarcerated. That means they'll get to see Sheol. They'll get eternity, all right. It'll just be in the worst imaginable way possible.
Those
love my name, they're my family. That's what he says.
Yeah, there are three things that Yahweh condemns as the greatest three abominations ever perpetrated on humankind. One of those three is the removal of his name, Yahweh, and the replacement of his name with the satanic title Lord. One is Jews telling Gentiles that they're welcome in heaven uncircumcised. That would be Paul. And then the third is diminishing the importance of his name, which Christianity has done.